யோகேன சித்தஸ்ய பதேன வாச்சாம் மலம் சரீரஸ்ய ச வைத்யகேன யோபாகரோத்தம் ப்ரவரம் முனீனாம் பதஞ்சலிம் பிராஞ்சலிரானதோஸ்மி ஸ்துவே பதஞ்சலிம் வியாசம் சங்கரம் ச முனித்ரயம் கர்த்ருசூத்ரஸ்ய பாஷ்யஸ்ய க்ரமாத் விவரணஸ்ய ச. So we are coming back to the text. So in the last session, we'll dealt with this 39th sutra, Aparigraha Sthaire Janma Katha Sambodhaka. This is the very bit tricky sutra, sometimes difficult to understand in the light of modern science. Literal meaning is, when you practice aparigraha, that is complete freedom and absence of covetousness, greed, I mean a desire to go about collecting things from others. When you are completely free from this, then you will be able to understand your past life and your future life. This is the literal meaning of the sutra. So I shall try to explain this in the light of the commentaries and also the modern life situations. Now, our mind has got 5 compartments. Mind means internal organ. Here means antakaranam it is called. Not just a mind as such, but the whole mental system, the internal system, is divided into 5 compartments. That is mana, buddhi, chitta, ahankara. So, first is mind. Mind is, in Vedanta and Yoga, an internal instrument which fluctuates, which is a platform of conflicting, mutually opposing thought currents. We often, when we see an object from a distance, we may not be sure as to what that object is. We may speculate in our mind whether it is the form of a human being or a lamppost. These are examples given in the ancient texts which really bring out the whole sense behind. So, conflicting thought currents, sankalpa vikalpatmika antakarna vritti mana, this is the Vedantic definition, means sankalpa and vikalpa, we think, we imagine, we speculate as to what that object is, whether it is a human being or a lamppost or some other object. So contradictory thought currents. Here, that department of the internal organ, which functions as a platform for conflicting thought currents, is functioning. When we reach that object and when we come to a decision, a definite understanding that that object is not the form of a human being, is a lamppost, then our intellect, what we call buddhi, is functioning. Our intellectual dimension of the same internal organs. And then after deciding that it is a lamppost, we immediately recollect from our memory that I have seen this lamppost earlier, sometime in the past. So you identify yourself as a person who has seen that object. This aham means the ego system, I mean our identity with ourselves. And the memory is recollected because you have seen that object or something similar to that somewhere else. And the image or the memory of that experience is brought back to the surface of the mind. So you re-experience, you recollect that from your memory. And then you definitely come to a decision as to what it is. So the point is, you identify yourself as the one who has seen it. You bring back the memory from the past, and you come to a definite understanding as to what that object is. So our chittam, which is called that aspect of the internal organs, which accumulates, which is a reservoir of all the previous impressions, memories, that particular system is, it is not something that is born, that is created with this body. That's an important point to understand. So this antakarana, or the particular system, the what you call chittam, in which the old memories and impressions are accumulated, it comes from the past, not from this life. We inherit it when we are reborn. And when we die, it doesn't die. When we take the next birth, this accompanies us. That's the explanation why sometimes we find people taking special interests, special instinctive interest in certain branches of discipline, in music, in painting, sometimes in spiritual life. And ordinary people may call them crazy frequently, you know. But then they display certain characteristics which make them stand out from other members of the family. Because they inherit these accumulated tendencies and impressions. This chittam is in the form of a lake. Let us think of a lake, say 100 feet deep. If different layers of impressions and memories collected in innumerable life cycles in the past, we can't see the bottom because there are different layers. How do we see the bottom? When we clean up the lake, remove all the mud, all the soil, all the dirt and filth, and then we are able to see the bottom of the lake. So when our mind attains this level of purity, then the future and the past will become as obvious to us as the present. So you have to remember one fact. There is no such thing as a past and future, to be very frank. The future we are going to experience only in the form of the present. And the past we experienced only in the form of the present. So there is no such thing as a past. So the dividing line is an imaginary line of bifurcation, as a line that we draw in the water surface. We're really non-existent. Because really speaking, there is only present. The so-called past really doesn't exist. Or it doesn't exist as an experience, because we experience that past not as the past, but as the present. When we recollect that experience from another point of time, we call it the past. And when we think of what we are going to experience or may have to experience later, we call it the future. But that future experience comes to our level, we experience that future only as the present, which means present is the only reality, the eternal present. Now, great spiritual seekers, advanced souls, who have completely become pure, who have attained a very high level of internal purity, will be able to see this bottom of this mental lake very clearly. So for them, these different layers do not exist, only one layer. One of the striking examples from practical life, those of you who are familiar with the life of Holy Mother, Sri Sharada Devi, there's a very interesting incident narrated in her life. You may read it in the reminiscences of the Holy Mother, Sri Sharada Devi. So she once visited Benares. Now, a few miles away from the city, there is a place called Saranath, Girvana. In fact, that's a place where Buddha preached for the first time. After he attained his spiritual wisdom, after he became Buddha, the enlightened one, straight away he went to Benares, which is the holiest city in Vedantic Hindu tradition. So she was visiting the famous ancient Shiva temple, which is thousands of years old, and also some of the Buddhist pagodas, Buddhist monasteries, all in ruins because they were destroyed by the Arab and Central Asian invaders, because those parts of India were subjected to invasions many times. Right from the beginning of the Christian era onwards, the first century, second century onwards, these places were. It went on, you know, these were parts of small kingdoms. So anyway, so she was visiting those ancient Buddhist monasteries, broken relics. They found, and there were a large number of European Indologists, visitors. That was a time, maybe in the 20s of 20th century, 1920s of 20th century, maybe earlier, no, it may be earlier than that, maybe during the first decade of 20th century. So there was a lot of interest in Indology and in the ancient Indian architectural site. So many Europeans were visiting, they were staring at. So some of Holy Mother's disciples asked her, say, why are these foreigners so much interested in these ancient things? They were looking at these ancient relics with great curiosity, with great interest. Then Holy Mother said, well, they are the very people who built this in their previous life cycles. Now they are coming back and watching their own creations. So, now, if you tell this to the foreigners, they won't understand. Or if that we also won't understand. But a great spiritual person can see the whole existence as one, in one dimension. I mean, without this line of demarcation between the past and the present. So when we reach a very high level of purity through this practice of yamas and niyamas, we gradually attain that level of purity, internal purity. And as we mentioned earlier, this aparigraha is an important discipline in the yama category. So, ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya, aparigraha is the fifth yama. Through practice of this aparigraha, I mean non-receiving of gifts from others, non-covetousness, which again is a kind of complete freedom from desire, it's total independence, which cleans up all the lower layers of the mental lake, which enables us to see the rock bottom of the lake, that enables us to see our own life and also other people's life as a single line. I mean, without the dividing line between the past and the present, or the present and the future. So that's what actually പതഞ്ജലി മീൻസ് ടു അസർട്ട് ഹിയർ. അപരിഗ്രഹസ്ഥൈരേ ജന്മകഥ സംബോധ. സോ വെൻ യു ഗെറ്റ് എസ്റ്റാബ്ലിഷ്ഡ് ഇൻ നോൺ കവറ്റസ്നെസ്, ദൻ ദ ഡൗൺ ഓഫ് നോളജ് ഓഫ് യുവർ പാസ്റ്റ് ആൻഡ് ഫ്യൂച്ചർ ലൈഫ്സ് ബിക്കംസ് ഓബ്വിയസ്. ബിക്കോസ് ആസ് ഐ മെൻഷൻഡ് ഏർലിയർ, അസമ്മാന തപോവൃദ്ധി സമ്മാന തപക്ഷയ. When we get indebted to others by getting honor from everyone, then we lose our spiritual splendor. And when we practice asceticism by subjecting ourselves to all forms of maybe dishonorable treatments and things like that, then we spiritually get elevated. So you can find this principle in any, maybe in the Christian monastic tradition, where they used to think that if they subject themselves to ill treatment, they're actually doing the sharing the burden of Jesus, sharing the weight of the cross. So is a very, you can see this, because spiritual science is a universal thing. At the highest level, many of these spiritual disciplines were practiced by all sincere seekers belonging to all traditions, because after all, spirituality is an inward journey, is a homeward or maybe Godward journey, return to our own true sense, true self. So this is the idea behind. If you are honored everywhere, then you become a debtor, you become a pauper spiritually. In spite of your greatness, if you are not honored, then you become a rich man, rich in spirit. That's why it's called, asammana tapo vriddhi. Vriddhi means prosperity. You become more prosperous. You become rich in tapa, means spiritual asset, spiritual wealth. Sammana tapakshayaka. If you are honored everywhere, then those who honor you take a percentage of your spiritual wealth. And to that extent, you'll be poorer. And if you are dishonored by others, then whatever little spiritual wealth they have got will be transferred to your account. So you are the gay, you gain. Otherwise, you lose. This principle you find in many of the... If you write the autobiographical writings of Saint Teresa of Avila, when she had to face a lot of problems, direct or indirect persecutions, this is a kind of soliloquy, in the kind of monologue, she tells herself, well, that is Jesus' gift. And to that extent, she is moving closer to Jesus. So you can find this idea. So that's we finished. Next sutra is the 40th one. That also we just touched. Saucha swanga jugupsa parei rasam sargaka. So as I mentioned last time, of course, you know this. When we keep our body clean, neat and clean, when we make it a strong discipline to remain physically, externally clean, then at one stage, cultured people will start thinking that's a point of spiritual evolution, beginning. Well, I'm keeping my body so fine, so clean, wearing the best available suits in the market. But what is there within this system? So that thinking, so you can see the contrast. The costly suit we wear, the perfume that people spray all over dead body, the efforts, the money they spend for whitening the teeth and blackening the hair, and finally we find the hair gets grayer and grayer again, going back, and the teeth also lose their whiteness. Then at one point we start thinking, well, it is, after all, something that cannot be kept clean. I mean, this, with the what we have within the body, external body, cannot be eternally clean when we see those things. When anything that comes out of it, you know, it is something that we abhor. So then in such a situation, when we reach that level of higher, the highest perfection in this cleanliness, then we also feel, well, all other human body systems also are like ours. I mean, they are maybe clean outside, but not necessarily so very clean within, as we also understand. So that is bahya saucha, means external cleanliness, teaches us the limitation or the imperfection of this physical body. The next sutra is a bit complicated. That is 41st one. Sattva shuddhi saumanasya aikagrya indriya jaya atma darsana yogitvani cha bhavanti. So those of you who read this sutra will have to understand this. There is one fraction at the end which is left out. So it is obvious. It is called vakya sesha, means something that we have to remember. It is there, though it is not part of the text. So the full meaning of the sutra becomes clear, those of you study the original text. Sattva shuddhi saumanasya aikagrya indriya jaya atmadarsana yogatvani cha, up to this sutra. Then the next one is bhavanti. There is such a word that should be added to this, which is called vakya sesha. Vakya means sentence, sesha means what is left out but not mentioned. So it is something that should be understood. Now the meaning of this sutra is this. First, we practice external discipline, and then we realize, we reach a level of internal discipline, because internal cleanliness, when we practice external cleanliness and reach a very high level of perfection in practicing external cleanliness, we start thinking of our real self. This is what we have within this bag of skin, we call the physical body. At that stage, we start thinking of something transcendental, something that goes beyond the body, the higher spiritual self or consciousness of the soul or Atman. So that's the beginning of abhyantara shaucha, means internal purity. So we have to remember, shaucha is the first of the niyamas. Shaucha santosha tapaswadhyaya ishwara pridhana. Shaucha is the first of the niyamas. Yamas are universal. Niyamas are important, but they are subsidiary to yamas. Yamas are fundamental, foundational disciplines. Niyamas are subsidiary. Not that they are unimportant or insignificant, but they do have importance. Okay, now coming to the subject. So when you reach a level of internal purity, then what happens? You attain a level of internal purity or spiritual achievement, which is called sattva shuddhi, which means internal mental purification. So this is a cycle. As we start becoming more and more pure mentally, when we attain internal purification, then what happens? We attain mental purity. And when we attain that, the first sign of attaining mental purity is dukkha kshaya, which means saumanasya and aikagrya. So you feel a kind of internal pleasantness, a feeling of lightness. Not that we'll be laughing and taking things lightly, cutting jokes, not that way. It is a kind of internal feeling of completeness, fulfillment, which can really be only experienced but cannot be fully explained. That you can see when we become, when after long prayer, with sincere prayer, or after any kind of spiritual discipline, maybe reading a good holy book with all sincerity, and when we identify ourselves with those ideas, then what happens, you know, we feel a kind of internal pleasantness. And that is due to dukkha kshaya, means that the feeling of anxiety, worry, or grief, all this vanish. I get din concentration. Many people complain because they cannot concentrate. And the real reason for this lack of concentration is the mind is wandering elsewhere. And the mind is this, that is why it is called, you know, Aikagriya and Indriya Jaya, they are interrelated. For one the other comes. Both are related. When our mind is wandering all around the place, when the different senses of perception drag the mind towards different visual or audio objects, then mind begins to wander. And when mind begins to wander, there is no concentration possible. So, if when we read this book, and if we think of something else, it need not be visual. We may be watching something we saw in the morning, even while reading this book right now, because the visual image of something that we saw in the morning comes back in the mind, and when we are looking at the book, actually we won't be seeing what is written in the book, but we'll be seeing in the book what we saw in the zoo or in the street in the morning or the previous day or several years back. So that's how different senses of perception drag the mind away from its real focus. And that's how mind begins to wander. So also when we are reading the book, if we are distracted by a sound that comes from the street, from a car, then also when we hear that sound, we always associate that sound with a moving object, truck or car or whatever it may be. So we will be seeing that when we hearing that. So when we are sitting on the chair with the book in hand, we are touching the table, and if you feel the pressure, when you feel the touch the table, it means the mind is dragged in that direction. Sense of touch, so sense of hearing, sense of sight, sense of touch. And as I feel, well, there's a bad odor coming from the nearby room when I'm reading the book. It means you are not reading the book. You are actually concentrating on the odor, the smell that is coming. So sense of smell. And many people, they chewing gum, so they may be enjoying the taste, sense of taste. So all these five senses drag the mind away from the central focus. So that's why Aikagriya and Indriya Jaya, those who have control over their senses of perception and senses of action, will be able to focus their full mental energy on these things. That is the secret of memory, actually. Nobody can really remember if they memorize through mechanical process. Logically, they cannot remember. But so the real method of remembering something is if you remember the idea, and next the mind goes to the words, the statement or the word which is related to that idea. And if people do not remember, memorize with the associated idea, their memory will not really be logical. They won't be able to recollect that in the correct context. The secret of memory is concentration, and the secret of concentration is the ability to withdraw the mind from different sense objects, to stop the mind from wandering towards different sense objects, visual or audio objects, and to focus the whole mental energy on a single single point. So that's why it is called this cycle. First, internal mental purity, then complete freedom from dukkha or worry, a feeling of internal pleasantness. That is saumanasya you find here. You mentioned. Then concentration, one-pointedness, then steadiness and control of the senses. And all these are the essential steps towards the higher spiritual achievement of understanding our own self. So that is the 41st sutra. 42nd one is santoshat anuttama sukhalabhaka. So when we reach this level of santosha, means contentment. So contentment is totally different from satisfaction. Satisfaction is momentary. So in a way, any kind of satisfaction is a kind of momentary contentment. When you are perpetually in a state of satisfaction, then it is called contentment. And that contentment comes only when we reach a stage where we can link ourselves towards something beyond, something transcendental, when we can link ourselves, connect ourselves to a higher spiritual ideal, which is different from the empirical things. Because anything at the empirical level is subject to change. It comes and it goes. When it comes, we become happy or satisfied. When we lose it, when it goes away, we become unhappy. So that is momentary, subject to changes. Is there something that is not changing, that's beyond change? That is the understanding of our own true self. Our own true self, what we are. When we realize that we are Atman or consciousness that is beyond the body, beyond mind, beyond intellect, because every experience at the level of intellect and mind is subject to change. They cannot remain eternal. So that stage of transcendental happiness or experience is called santosha. And one sign of the santosha is kind of acquisition of unsurpassed, infinite pleasure. The pleasure, the word is used, but remember it is infinite pleasure, which means that pleasure is a transcendental experience. It's a transcendental experience of blissfulness. In fact, this is one of the first signs of any spiritual seeker. This pleasure, this internal blissfulness. We should not mistake it as, I mean, lightheartedness or always in a humorous way or not taking things seriously. No. That contentment and the joy and blissfulness associated with the contentment is subtle. It is the ability to remain unshaken, unaffected, even in the midst of great challenges, great problems. Still, essentially, we remain unaffected. So this should be understood very clearly. If you read the life of many great spiritual teachers, you know, how do we understand the real meaning of this contentment? You can see that they also did a lot of things, they also corrected. See, if you read Swami Vivekananda's life, or any great spiritual teacher for the matter, sometimes they become impatient. Sometimes they even scolded the disciples to teach them. When something went wrong, when things were not done properly, they corrected them. They were not always in a state of total insensitivity. They were sensitive, but even in the midst of correcting others, even at the time of getting angry with others, to teach them, to correct them, they were essentially not affected. So that should be remembered. Frequently we often, someday we do not fully understand if you look at literal meaning. A great teacher may use strong language, may punish the disciples if they make a mistake, but even in the midst of all that, they are really not affected because they look at these activities like teaching others, scolding others, the disciples, for making mistakes, deliberately making mistakes. Even in the midst of all these activities, they have a higher transcendental dimension to the personality. Because these activities, they consider as secondary. Even in the midst of being completely identified with all these responsibilities, they retain within their mind the idea, the conviction that, well, my true self is not this teacher scolding his disciple, the leader guiding the followers in the right direction. No. These things take place at the secondary level, what we call vyavahariga level, the relative level, from Vedantic perspective. They have a higher absolute and transcendental dimension. They are linked to that all the time. So, while remaining linked to this higher transcendental dimension of the personality, they are busy, they do so much work, they achieve great things. But if you interpret their life and activities just on the basis of their external activities, we lose the real picture of the person. There's another picture. In the midst of all this, they remain unaffected. So, remember, this santosha is not any kind of a feeling of external satisfaction, or is it because the translation may be, anuttama sukha labha. This is the result mentioned here. When you attain this santosha as a result of internal purity, abhyantara shauja, you acquire anuttama sukha labha, means you acquire unsurpassed, immeasurable pleasure. This is what you read in the translation. So this pleasure, this is the literal meaning of sukha. Labha means acquisition. That meaning should not misguide us. The real meaning is they reach a state of transcendental blissfulness, and remaining at that level, they teach the world. If you read the life of Siddhamakrishna, you find he was not a doting uncle. He was very strict. But in the gospel, you find Siddhamakrishna's room was a mart of joy. if people wondered, he was in a state of perpetual, unsurpassed blissfulness. Because he was linked to the infinite. But remaining at that stage, he taught people, he scolded when the disciples made mistakes. All that he did. So, that is the real meaning of this Anuttama Sukhalabha, because the meaning of the sutra should be understood in that context. Now we will come to, of course, we have to remember, when we remember all this, how a real yogi reaches this stage. Already we discussed earlier this particular, mantra. It is a state of the highest spiritual realization, the highest degree of contemplation, plus intense action. So it is not a state of static, inactive, insensitive state of mind. It is a harmony, is a synthesis, a blending of the highest spiritual achievement, internal concentration and contemplation, and doing our duty properly in this world. So that's the meaning of the sutra. Now we'll come to 43rd sutra. 43rd sutra is this. Kayendriya siddhihi asuddhi kshayat tapasaha. This is a sutra. So the prose order should be changed to understand. The prose order is tapasaha asuddhi kshayat kayendriya siddhihi. This is the prose order. The correct prose order. The meaning is this. When you practice these great austerities, internal purity, external purity, yamas and niyamas, all this, then what happens? When all impurities are gone, that is called asuddhikshayat. So asuddhi means impurity. Then body reaches a level of perfection, and you reach a level of perfection in body and sense organs. We'll explain this. Now, what are these impurities? So that should be understood. So here, Kayendriya Siddhi is mentioned here. It is a combination of two words. One is Kaya Siddhi and Indriya Siddhi. But this austerity or spiritual practices at the physical level, it is called Kaya Siddhi. Means, at a physical level, when you practice these great spiritual disciplines, and also then what happens? Indriya Siddhi means, at that stage, we will be able to see and understand things which ordinary people cannot understand. So this is the literal meaning. First I shall explain. This sutra requires a lot of explanation and illustrations. So the sutra should be read correctly. First, tapasaha asuddhikshayat kayendriya siddhi. Kayendriya siddhi means perfection. I mean the highest attainment at the physical level in the body. And also at the level of sense organs. How does this happen? Due to removal of all impurities. And that happens because of the practice of all these great disciplines that we have mentioned so far. Now, what are these impurities which enable us to reach a level of complete control and purity at the sensory level? Physical purity we can understand. See, Kaya Siddhi means perfection. Higher achievements at the physical level. This may be easily explained. The two levels of one. At a physical level, you can see big wrestlers, martial artists, great people who intensely concentrate on certain skills at a physical level. They reach a level of perfection in those disciplines, in those areas, which could be the envy of common people. So that becomes very obvious. But there is another kind of kaya siddhi, physical perfection, physical miraculous powers at a physical level, which Yoga Sutra mentions. They are called Ashtasiddhi, which you may have read about in some books. It is called Ashtasiddhi, eight spiritual powers. Anima, Mahima, Garima, Leghima, Prapti, Prakamim, Isittum, Vasittum. I shall explain this. If you read the lives of great spiritual seekers, sometimes you come across some phenomena which are called miracles. Miracles are interpreted in Christian mystical tradition as divine intervention. And many of the great thinkers, many great mystics were persecuted by people who interpreted wrongly as the devil's intervention. So that's why they were persecuted, subject to Inquisition and all that. But in Christian mystical tradition, these miracles are frequently interpreted, used to be interpreted as divine intervention. Now, these miracles have got two dimensions. One at a physical level. See, Yoga will tell you, Yoga Sutras tell you, that a person who practices many of these disciplines can become very small, very tiny, physically. It's called anima, or can become very big. It's called mahima, can become very heavy. Garima, and can become very light and small, called leghima. And can acquire anything, it's called prapti. The ability to obtain anything that is desired is called prakamyam. Isittum is control over others' lordship. Vasittum means the ability to control their influence on other people. Some of these are natural faculties. These are not official powers, but naturally come to certain persons due to their practice of higher disciplines. And other perfection mentioned is Indriya Siddhi, because this word, Kaya Indriya Siddhi, should be understood as Kaya Siddhi and Indriya Siddhi. Kaya Siddhi means perfection, miraculous powers at a physical level. These Ashta Siddhis, eight miraculous powers. The other one is simple, but it's much more important, the ability to see things at a distance, to understand subtle truths, etc. I mean, to remember, to perceive, as their mind becomes more and more pure, the mind also acquires a degree of sharpness, effectiveness, with which they can understand and remember things without much difficulty. Mind, because as I said, the mind is like a knife. If it is blunt, it takes a long time for you to cut anything with a blunt knife. If the knife is sharp, it works very well. So mind gets one-pointed or concentrated, then it can quickly understand something and retain and express it. The mind becomes an effective tool in our hands. That is the secret of great spiritual teachers acquiring vast amount of learning within a very short time. You may have remembered, one of the commentaries on Yoga Sutra belonged to Shankaracharya. And that is supposed to be one of his most insignificant books. But that book is very grand. But because he wrote much greater books, that book itself is somewhat unimportant. He is supposed to be the greatest poet in Sanskrit. because along with being the greatest philosopher saint, his devotional poetry are ranked higher than the works of the greatest poet of Sanskrit literature, Kalidasa. He is not supposed to be the greatest Sanskrit poet because along with the greatest poetry, he wrote much greater philosophical books. And you know, how old was he when he completed all these books? This old man requires several decades to master. Today, he was, maybe he was less than 16 years old. He became a monk when he was less than 7 years. Before becoming a monk, by sixth year, he had mastered all the four Vedas and everything. And there was no book available. All the Upanishads that we read today were actually, he had mastered the whole Vedic literature, very huge. The Upanishad mantras, he codified from his memory and wrote commentaries. So all the Vedantic philosophy we get today were imposed upon the Vedic mantras by Shankara, by his intellect. Gita we read today because he wrote a commentary. Otherwise, nobody will think of reading Gita today. So, I'm giving some example. And this man traveled all over Indian subcontinent, and you have to remember, from Afghanistan all the way to Burma, and from Sri Lanka all the way to Indochina border, four times. And founded four monasteries in four corners of Indian subcontinent. And reformed hundreds of temples. And founded no less than 10 monastic orders, to one of which we all belong. And he finished his life when he was hardly 32 years. So how could he do that? Or you can think of Lord Jesus Christ. Okay. We don't know what was happening from his 12th year to 30th year. He must have been studying. But his mission in this world lasted only a few years. You can Vivekananda. He was just 30 years when he came to America. And when he was 39 years, he passed away. So you find great spiritual teachers, many parts of the world, many traditions, all traditions, doing great things, achieving great things. And Sri Ramakrishna, mind you, the revival of Vedantic tradition, we all discuss Vedanta today because of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. And he was less than 50 years when he passed away. That's 50 years. So, and Vivekananda is one of the 16 disciples of Sri Ramakrishna. The point is, people who practice internal purity and external purity, devotion, they acquire a great mental faculty. But that faculty will function only if you say no to all these miraculous powers. That's one interesting thing. All these miraculous powers that we discussed today are stumbling blocks in spiritual life. If you go after them, or if you get interested in them, if you reject them, then they'll be your slaves. In the sense, these miraculous powers you may utilize in spite of your total aversion to make use of them for the good of the world, for the good of others. So, that's an important point mentioned. We'll discuss this sutra again, the 43rd sutra, in the next class. So, before that, there is an announcement. We will not have class next Friday, March the 11th, because of Sri Ramakrishna's birthday celebration the next day. So, we will have Sri Ramakrishna's birthday celebration on 12th March, Saturday. And because of that, there will be no class on Friday, March the 11th. The next class will be on Friday, March 18th at 7:30 p.m. So please remember, no class next week. The next class will be on Friday, March the 18th, same time. Thank you. Now we will have interaction. So those of you who would like to ask questions, most welcome. We have 5 minutes.
Hare Swamiji, last class you mentioned it's important to practice moderation in asceticism. Are there any signs that one can look for if they are going too far in that? How do you define moderation? How much is too much?
When a person feels any kind of any tendency for doing in excess of it, you also can feel. To give an example, those who do pranayama get energized. They feel more enthusiasm. So at that time, they should be able to restrain themselves. The best thing to do is to keep reading, to keep acquainted with these ideas. So that will internally guide us and will help us to stop where we have to stop. So that's one method. And unless one practices under a teacher, it is risky. Of course, that is obvious. But these days, it may not be easy to get teachers for everyone. But one important method is to keep attending these classes and then to keep acquainted with these texts by reading or listening to these ideas. So once we do that, you may feel yourself, well, here I must stop. Otherwise, people get into trouble practicing many of these disciplines. Most of the problems are due to the practice of asana and pranayama. Pranayama could cause either asthmatic problems or delusions, schizophrenic problems or manic problems, because overexcitement, over energy, because the body generates heat and energy when you practice too many asanas and lot of pranayama beyond limit, the beginning without a proper discipline, without the presence of teacher to guide you, then it could lead to all these problems. So that's the thing. Right. So we will have class, remember, next class will be Friday, March the 18th. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om. That's it. Sri Ramakrishna Paramastu.